opposite side of Matthew Knight Arena. Wild Duck, easy to find if you're coming from downtown. As you pass Matthew Knight Arena, make the right-hand turn. It's right there on your left side. You definitely can't miss us. I've got the banner in the window. It's like I'm a display at Macy's during Christmas rush. I've got, actually, what do I have here? I've got tickets to tonight's game. So let's do it like I usually enjoy. If you come up to me and you're one of the first to ask me, I got two pair to tonight's game courtesy of T-Mobile operated by Express Location Hotline, and you ask me for the tickets, I will simply hand them to you. That sounds pretty simple, no? But you got to come down here in order. Wow, what a game tonight. UCLA in town, number two, unbeaten. Biggest game in the history of Matthew Knight Arena, I think. I mean, it was a big one when Arizona came a couple years ago, but it was kind of unexpected. All that folks anticipated Oregon could accomplish this season, still there to be had. UCLA just exploding from the gate with their great freshmen. They're also really deep. They've got a good bench. Odds makers like this one tight. I heard Doug Gottlieb probably late in the 1 o'clock hour, early 2 o'clock hour, say he actually likes Oregon to win the game outright. And then, of course, doesn't get much easier with that really good USC team coming to town on Friday night. So it's, you know, the tradition of the old Pac-10 was Thursday, Saturday. This one happens to go Wednesday, Friday, UCLA here, and Corvallis on Friday, USC playing the Beavs tonight, and then Oregon on Friday. A lot to get to. So Richard Sherman's nuts, right? He told a reporter today, he didn't have his usual weekly press conference, that it's a privilege to take part in one of his press conferences. Yeah, that's what it is. Bowl games on here right now. The Russell Athletic Bowl, West Virginia in Miami. I don't know, is this time of year, I know that unless you're in a confidence pool, or obviously it helps if the program you root for or follow is in a bowl game, you pay it a little more mind. It just seems to be lacking even for this time of December for bowl games. We are up till the 28th. You're starting to see teams from the majors in there, as Northwestern out of the Big Ten was in the South Bronx today at Yankee Stadium to knock off Pitt out of the ACC, just as we're wrapping up because of the Duck game against UCLA. Our pregame starts at 5. We'll be out of here at 5:30, and that's when we get the second Pac-12 team in action, with Utah taking on Indiana down in Santa Clara in the Foster Farms Bowl. All right, much to discuss, but usually at this time, I tell you it's time to get our view from the middle, but happily for him, he's in the greater Phoenix area getting ready for the Fiesta Bowl. I was scraping ice off my rig this morning. Find his work online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are things?
Life is good. How are you?
Good. I'm assuming you did not have to use an ice scraper on your rental car this morning in the greater Phoenix area?
I did not. I did not. In fact, they do not issue. Listen, I go places where they issue those as standard equipment. This is not one of those places.
So you and the family, nice holiday. You didn't have to travel. You can just kind of sit there and relax with your peeps.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I had a good holiday with family, extended family, and you know, Christmas with family is always great. So it was a ton of fun, and then I flew out here and, you know, back to college football covering the Fiesta Bowl, and then next week I'll end up in Tampa for the championship game.
Nice. Again, no ice scraper required. We know the bigger bowl games are, you know, start showing up right around now. But, you know, it's been about a week and change. I'm always curious, as somebody who follows college football, gets paid to cover college football, your level of engagement, have there been any recent games that have caught your eye, or like a lot of us, are they kind of on in the background, and if one looks fun, you'll actually kind of focus on it?
Well, that's kind of where I am right now. The I'm not even sure. It's the Russell Athletic Bowl. It's on right now. West Virginia just scored against Miami, and that's exactly how I do it. I was working on a piece for tomorrow, and then you guys called to do the radio, and that's on in the background here in my hotel room. So that's exactly how I watch the early bowl games, and then, you know, if I can carve out some time to catch two or three, I will. I want to see the Rose Bowl. I'm really intrigued to see how Penn State shows against the USC team that by the end of the year was playing as well as anybody, because I think that will, you know, that'll show us kind of maybe how good the Big Ten really, really was, maybe. I'm intrigued by that. I want to see the Sugar Bowl, because if not for a contractual agreement, there wouldn't be an SEC team other than Alabama in a New Year's Six game. But because obviously the Sugar Bowl is going to take an SEC team every year, unless it's a semifinal, you know, Auburn's in there playing Oklahoma. And I think there's a lot of ways you can look at that. It's an 8-4 Auburn team. How will they stack up against a 10-2 Oklahoma team that, you know, won the Big 12? We think the Big 12 is really down, and I think it would give us a good look at whether the SEC is down. Those are the kinds of games. That's just two examples. The kinds of games that I want to pay attention to outside the playoff.
Well, I'll be perfect. You know, going back to the late 60s when I started following, early 70s, I don't think I'd be as big a college football fan as I am if it wasn't USC in the Rose Bowl. So there's kind of a how well they were playing, the matchup with Penn State, who kind of get aced out of the college football playoff, and of course the tradition of USC, you get Big Ten versus Pac-12. So yeah, aside from maybe the game you're going to see, I think this one is as intriguing as any, don't you?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, I think the Fiesta Bowl is it features two teams that, when they played really well, are as good as anybody in the country. And I do mean anybody in the country, including that behemoth over there in the Peach Bowl. But they haven't played to that standard probably for a full game, either one of them, whether it's Clemson or Ohio State. I actually think the winner will give, and if we assume Alabama beats Washington, which I'm not sure anybody should assume, but we all are going to, I think the winner will give Alabama all it wants. And I think especially if it's Clemson, and I kind of tend to think it will be, there's every shot they might win. And look, if that sounds like you're having to come up with reasons why Alabama won't be the national champ, that might be true. I mean, that's how good they've been all year. But I just think this could be a fascinating, really fun game, the Fiesta Bowl, and that we'll be watching it with this lens that we watch everything in college football through right now, of how do they stack up against Alabama.
Yeah, that seems to be the barometer, kind of front and center. Before we get into some more of the specifics, you wrote a very interesting piece about Ohio State center Pat Elflein, who's the lone senior on that front. You know, he was, when they beat Oregon 2 years ago, he was a backup to Jacoby Boren. And, you know, there's so much attention, guys who like McCaffrey and Fournette who are leaving. And you wrote, you couldn't write a much better script. George, what kind of year has he had, and how much has it meant to his teammates, you know, that he returned for a senior year?
Well, he's had a really good year. He was a guard. You know, he had started two full seasons as a sophomore, a third-year sophomore, and as a fourth-year junior at guard. And then Jacoby Boren was among the three guys, as you mentioned, that left, and they needed him to slide over to center. He probably could have gone to a you know, it could have come out, would have been probably a third-round draft pick, and he decided to come back. So I think it actually was probably to his financial advantage to come back, frankly. You know, he's upgraded his draft stock to where he is in at least one draft board I've saw. He's the number two center coming out. By playing center, that's probably the place he was going to play in the pros anyway, so moving over to center was big. But, you know, never mind him, it ended up being a huge deal for Ohio State, because they, you know, they had lost so much off their offensive line. You know, we've talked all about how young they were all year. They brought back six starters. Only three guys, and Elflein's one of them, actually started in that 2014 season when they won the national title. And so that's how young they are and how different they are than the team that won the whole thing. And so for him to be back as sort of a linchpin of that line is a huge reason that, you know, if they've got talent, but it's a huge reason why there was cohesion and leadership and all the kinds of things you need to get to this kind of a place in a season, to be 11-1 and in the college football playoff.
Yeah, and for folks who aren't aware, he also won the Remington Award.
That's right.
As the best center in the country.
After moving over to that position. Now, he played that in high school and had been the backup center and things like that, but at Ohio State. But still, that's a pretty good accomplishment to move over for your senior year and win that.
Unbelievable. I want to project a bit. You know, Alabama just keeps coming up again and again. We all know the Nick Saban resume, 4 titles at Bama, 1 at LSU. But let's say we project this out and Ohio State wins. Then you've got Urban Meyer with 4 titles, unprecedented, 2 at 2 different schools. And Meyer's only 52 years old, Saban's 65. I mean, would that all of a sudden give people pause to think, look, it's been assumed Saban is the best college coach of our time and he's on the list, but wow, what this guy is accomplishing is off the charts.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that it lessens Nick's accomplishments any if that happens, but I'll tell you what it does do. What you didn't mention was, if that were to happen, Ohio State would have now won 2 out of the last 3. So
they have
a mini-dynasty going on with the Alabama dynasty, which would have slid to 4 out of 8 instead of 4 out of 7, which is still pretty good. you know, it's still historic, but you'd have sort of a miniature dynasty or something approaching a dynasty happening at Ohio State at the same point. As a matter of fact, if that happens too, then I think you look different at the 2015 season when obviously they lost one time. They didn't play very well until after taking a loss that they shouldn't have taken to Michigan State. Michigan State with a backup quarterback. Ohio State played terribly on a miserable day and lost at home, and they lost their shot to get into the playoff. And then against Michigan and in the Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame, we finally saw the team that we all thought, you know, was the unanimous preseason number one, and we all thought would win the thing for the second year in a row. If they were to win this national title to go 2 out of 3, then all of a sudden it takes you back to just how close they were to maybe winning 3 in a row. And then also the fact would be that they would win this national title after replacing 16 starters. You know, and it's 8 on each side of the ball, too, if I count right. I think they returned 3 offensive and 3 defensive starters. And so, I mean, you think about that. That's just amazing.
No, that's why I brought that up, because sometimes you need to redirect people's focus as continue
with George. Yes. It's a big yes, Steve, because first of all, I'm not sure I don't think they beat Clemson. In this case, I think Clemson has the better quarterback, Deshaun Watson, and I don't think they beat. I'm not sure that they beat Alabama if they beat Clemson. I think Clemson might have a pretty good shot to beat Alabama, and you know, if you want to still pick Alabama, you'd look really smart, probably.
All right, I actually want to focus on Clemson as we continue with George Schroeder. You know, you always hear who's elite, which program is now elite, and it seems like it changes. We know the historic Blue Bloods. And Clemson, you know, kind of became a verb for a lot of years for the wrong reasons. Over more than 50 years, they made one major bowl when they got their share of the national title 35 years ago. But now they've made a major bowl 4 of the past 6 seasons. They're back in the playoffs. So the hierarchy they've changed the current hierarchy. You know, they're up there with Bama and Ohio State, save they haven't won it all, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. They lost 45-40 last year. If they win that game, and maybe if not for just an onside kick call, if they win that game, then this conversation changes. That's how tight these little pivot points are in college football at that level, you know. And so, and in fact, if Clemson wins that game, I'm not sure we're looking, even in a 13-0 Alabama team right now, I'm not sure we're looking at them in quite the same way. I think if Clemson wins last year, we're looking at Alabama and going, yeah, but how good is their competition really this year? I think really that's what we're thinking. Now, we're not thinking that. We're thinking, wow, they are so dominant. And I think that's fair. But to go back to your question, yeah, look, Dabo Swinney has built a sustainable elite program. Now, I do think this is their window for at least, because I think they drop off some next year. And the reason is they have a transcendent quarterback in Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
I mean, he is as good as they come, and you're going to see him go very near the top of the draft come April, assuming, like everybody else does, that he comes out early, and clearly he's coming out early. And so they have a transcendent quarterback. And, look, I don't care who they replace him with. In college football, if you are a team not named Alabama, it has never been more important, if you're trying to win at the elite level, than to have that kind of a quarterback. You know, Oregon obviously won, frankly, beyond its talent probably because they had Marcus Mariota. I mean, it makes so much of a difference. And in this case, they've got talent all over the place. But in order to win those big-time games at the highest level, and in order to not take that loss to Florida State annually and that kind of thing, you've got to have that guy. And so while I think they are elite, there's no question you're right. Dabo Swinney has turned them into an elite, sustainable program. Clemsoning is no longer a thing. I think their window it closes or narrow, you know, or it, you know, it goes away for next year unless you can show me a quarterback.
Sure, and whatever quarterback you have, not likely to be this kid.
Right. On the
USA Today site, George has a piece kind of comparing this edition of Clemson to Ohio State from last year. The obvious difference is the Buckeye loss last year cost them. They missed the playoff with that Michigan State. You know, the Tigers fell to Pitt, but lo and behold, here they are. So what you wrote, what are kind of some of the similarities, and were the Tigers maybe that loss to the Panthers provided a little bit of a wake-up call?
Well, I think it did. And look, I don't think that it happened a little bit earlier in the season than that loss to Michigan State did in 2015 for Ohio State. And so we did see all of a sudden Ohio State look like the Ohio State team we'd been expecting all year long after that loss. And that was like, wow, they're really talented. And at the end of the season, I don't think there's any question that they were one of the top four teams in college football. Didn't mean they should be in the playoff, and they shouldn't have been. But it's pretty clear they were, I think they were the best team in college football at the end of the year. The difference is they didn't get in. And so so on the front end, the difference is Ohio State was coming off the national title, and they spent the whole year shouldering the load of expectations in 2015 and, you know, pressure and trying to be motivated after reaching the top of the mountain, and it was hard. And then they got knocked out of it, and then they played like we thought they would play. So Clemson didn't win the national title last year. They fell just short, and so you had that sort of sour taste and motivation, and that probably helped. But they still had to shoulder these crazy expectations going into this season. And it's pretty clear they struggled with those for part of the year. And really, I'm not sure that they fully blossomed after the Pitt loss to where they've really shown us kind of what Ohio State did after their loss in 2015. But there's some similarities there in that we did begin to see them turn it on to some degree. And then the biggest difference that's good for Clemson is they didn't get knocked out of the playoffs. And so they still have a shot to show us if they've got the potential to be who we think they could be. But it's an interesting kind of comparison.
No, it was a great comparison.
But it's there, I think.
No, that was the first time I had heard that. I thought it was real intriguing. Wrapping with George Schroeder, we know who the favorite is. They're substantial against Washington. We've also heard how dangerous Chris Peterson is with a month to prepare. But with the playoff now, year three, do we kind of have to rethink things like how strong the favorite is? Because once upon a time, they had to get up for one game against a really good opponent. But now they have the month, and then, 8-10 days before they have to prepare for a second really good thing. So do we alter the power of the favorite a little bit?
Yeah, maybe. Listen, I'd say two things. One, Washington is really good. Well, you know, Eugene listeners know that. You may not like it, but Washington is really good. And it's been kind of interesting to see them sort of dismissed in this entire narrative of the playoff because of Alabama. And I kind of suspect we have a shot to see a pretty good game. And maybe I'll be wrong, but I don't see it as Michigan State being outmanned like last year in the Cotton Bowl against Alabama. I don't see that. I think this Washington team is a lot more talented than that team. And I actually think that now I also think Alabama's better than it was a year ago too. And that's part of it. And this is no disrespect to any other coach, but you're right. Chris Peterson is really good at preparing teams, whether it's in 1 week or 1 month. But I will say this, it isn't like he's preparing against a chucklehead. I mean, it's pretty clear Nick Saban knows how to prepare teams too. And I don't think there'll be any lack of motivation. I mean, they're trying to win the national title again. It's not some second tier bowl game. So Look, I think Alabama's going to win that game, but I do think that it's been completely overblown, and Washington is being completely underrated in this deal. It's been overblown, I guess, that it's a giant mismatch. I'm not sure that's the case. One other thing. People want to bring it up like it's Boise State, Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl 10 years ago. Look, there are a lot of things that happened in that Fiesta Bowl 10 years ago. One of them was that a team with a lot less talent won the game and flat outplayed Oklahoma. There's no question about that. Is Washington less talented than Alabama? Yes, and that's no slight because I think probably every team in the country is less talented than Alabama. I think that's pretty fair to say. But it isn't the same kind of talent disparity that Boise State had against Oklahoma. They're a lot closer to Alabama than Boise State was just matching up man for man against Oklahoma in that Fiesta Bowl. So to me, all of those comparisons are really imperfect.
I actually give Washington a chance. I think they've got the beasts up front on defense, and with Buda Baker and Sidney Jones, they've got a great secondary, and I think that could keep them in a tight game. So
pay attention to their offensive line, because we know Jake Browning's not exceptionally mobile, and that Alabama defensive front has been able to generate a pass rush all year long without having to send extra guys. And if they're able to do that, then I think Jake Browning is going to have a lot of trouble. If they're able to give Jake Browning a little bit of time, Alabama's secondary would be I'm not sure it's a weakness, but it's the thing that's less strong probably on that defense. And it'd be interesting to see if he'd be able to shred them. I think he'd have a shot.
Well, I feel like we're days away from some amazing college football. You enjoy your time in Glendale and travel safe back home, and look forward to talking to you next week when we're thinking about the national championship game. Always a pleasure, George. Thanks a lot.
Hey, same here. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Take it easy.